Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series.
You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Watch Hacks, streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
Right, so what you're about to hear is the recording of the live episode we did at the Hackney Empire to a full house. I want to thank all the audience that came. They were brilliant. And there is a Patreon section to this episode you can find at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein, where I think there's about 25 minutes, maybe 30, of extra chat with Phil. I want to thank Plosive Productions, Ben Williams and Naomi Parnell, and also the amazing crew at the Hackney Empire. It was such a good night. Hopefully we'll do another one soon. And if we do, if you missed this one, you must come to the next one. And if you came to that one, come to that one also. This is the full recording of the show, although there are some edits, because you have to have a circle of trust if you come to the show. And some things that were said there, you know, can't go out in the world. But I think most of it's here, and I really hope you like it. So let's do it.
Look out! It's like... Hello. My name is Brett Goldstein. I'm a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a big brave boy, and I love films. As Charles Darwin once said, a man who dares to waste 1 hour of time has not discovered the value of life. I've watched Grease 2 fucking shit tons because I know the deep value of living well and using my time on this planet in a way that makes me feel happy and spiritually fulfilled. Wow, fair play, Charles Darwin. See, even a really smart scientist knows it's the best one. Every week I invite a special guest over, I tell them they've died, then I get them to discuss their lives through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Sharon Stone, Jameela Jamil, Barry Jenkins, Mark Frost, and even Ed Gamble. I've got seriously connections because of my agent. But this episode is different. This episode is being recorded at the Hackney Empire with this audience. And today's very special guest, he's a stage actor, he's a screen actor, he's a cray, he's a model, he's a good boy, he's a funny boy, he's a kind boy, he's an award winner, he's a biker, he's a heartthrob, he's my nemesis, he's my friend, he's my brother, and most of all, he's my lover. He's everyone's second favourite footballer after Danny Rojas. Please welcome to the show, the magical, the brilliant, the amazing, it's Mr. Phil Duster! Yes.
Bloody hell. That's a lot of people. You told them James Acaster was going to be here, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. But they see, please, listen, play your cards right. There's a fucking agent in. Yeah. Phil Dunster, thank you for doing this. How are you, my friend?
I'm very well. I'm very excited to be here. I'm very honoured to have been asked, finally.
202 episodes, you start to get desperate. The point is, no, I don't remotely mean it. I love you. I save special people for the live shows.
Oh, I love you.
Yeah. Now, it's a little fun fact you might not know about me and Phil. I think we are destined across the ages because before we did Ted Lasso together, many years ago, one of the first plays, I wrote this play that was called Love Remains, and I took it to Edinburgh and I was in it, and the first review we got was a one-star review that said the plot and then said, who cares? Anyway.
It's most Edinburgh shows, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. Other than that, it was a great show. And but then years later, someone had seen it in Edinburgh and they asked me, could I put that play on? I really loved that play. And so I went to see that play, and the person who was playing me in the play was Phil Dunster.
That's me.
Yeah.
And
that's
also,
mad, isn't it?
That director is here tonight. Somewhere
Shut
in the crowd.
The fuck up.
Chris is here somewhere. Hello.
Hello, you. Okay.
And we met that night, and I remember how obviously stunning your eyebrows were, but also
yeah.
how generous you were with your praise, and I was terrified to meet you. But
well, when I watched you, I was like, because you were playing me, it was the part I played, and I was like, fuck, he's like a fitter, better, hotter. I mean, you were so fit that I was like, you were too fit to hate. Like, my instinct was not to like you, but I was like, he's just too pretty, isn't he? It's hard. And you were very good.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, look, Phil, when I do these podcasts privately, anything can be cut. If you say something you regret, we can cut it. Or if I ask you something personal, we can cut it. But we do have witnesses. So we need a safe word. So if we get into any territory, you're like, stop. The safe word is Keely prefers Roy. Okay. You can say that at any point in the evening. I would not mind.
That feels one-way traffic there.
No. anyway, you're a very good actor. Come on, let's admit it. But you ain't done a lot of comedy before Ted Lasso, true or false?
True.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that surprises me because you're one of the funniest people I know and I can't get through scenes with you. And yet, apparently you can also do drama and I just can't imagine it.
I'm very serious.
Yeah, you're so serious. You did Strike Back for years?
Yeah, Tits and Guns. Tits and Guns.
He was the tits?
Yeah.
Did you do, Moody pointing guns acting?
I more did movie tapping on laptop.
Oh, you were tapping, that guy.
It is amazing how, until you play that part, you really believe that they're, like, looking at something. I keep looking up. I don't know how. I can't actually see if I might just be looking at the ceiling like an idiot.
Keep your eyes on them, because if you look away, you forget they're there.
Oh, yeah. but you really are just tapping a computer and looking at a blank screen.
Oh, really?
And it feels maddening. It feels totally... And you're, like, looking at it like, does this look real? I don't know. In your brain, you're like, okay, so 3-6 is moving on to coordinate 3629, and you're like, fucking hell, is that over here? Is that... I'm like, do I... Okay, now look...
Do you move eyes?
Yeah. I'm like, top, bottom. Bottom, top, move, left. Okay, good. It's like the internal monologue is just rife.
I can't believe you were the computer guy in a tough...
I was literally the computer guy, yeah. And then I had some time running around with a gun.
Okay.
Which felt like, my dad was proud of me then.
Yeah. He's a very violent man. We'll get to that. Phil.
Yeah?
Oh, fuck. I forgot to tell you something.
No, I think I know. I don't know.
Shit. Oh boy. I should have put this piece of paper at the top.
I think I know what you're going to.
Ah.
I don't know, but.
We're all having a nice time.
Yeah.
But I guess I'll just say it.
I think I know what you're going to say, but what? You say.
No, we can say it the same thing. We'll go one, two, three. You're dead.
Gonna finally tell us what Brett is short for.
Oh.
That makes more sense. Yours makes more sense. Okay.
Oh.
Right, shit, okay.
I'd have told you if you were alive.
Sorry.
Oh, man.
Dead.
It's Brethaniel. What is... How did you die? How did you die? God will miss you.
It's,
how did you die?
It's mad. I was skydiving.
Yeah.
Hadn't been before.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty nervous. and got ready to jump out the plane.
Yeah.
And as I jumped out, released my parachute bowels. We're all thinking it. Released my parachute, and the gravity just didn't work, and I went up. I think the wind took me, and I just went up and left the Earth's atmosphere and space. Just space. I went to space, and my everything popped. And it was hideous.
God, the old gravity didn't work.
Yeah.
it's very tragic when basic gravity stops. Yeah. As happens so often.
Just up.
What a tragedy. I mean, not a bad way. So basically you went into the atmosphere and then exploded?
Yeah, and it was
in
like...
in the vacuum of space?
That's it.
That's it.
Just like some people I know. I just went up and it was like one of those comedy bits where my eyes bulged and... because I think... that's it.
Came out.
It's an audio medium and I like
that. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
It's good. And my intestines came out my ears.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You could make like a skipping rope out of your head. right.
But it was mostly popping. Yeah.
Right.
Mostly popping. And bowels coming out of my belly button.
Out of your belly button.
Yeah. Just, it was like a magician's handkerchief just coming out. I had time to do... I wasn't scared. I was just this mad. It just kept coming. Yeah.
Fuck, I wish I'd seen that. I mean, do you worry about death? That seems like a pretty good way to go. The old gravity stuff.
I used to worry about it quite a lot when I first sort of really thought about the concept of death and how it is just the final catastrophe that we will all come to. I think I just didn't really I couldn't really understand. Like how the universe expands but expands into nothing. It doesn't really make sense because it's not really part of the human experience. And I think I was really worried about it, and I spent a lot of time sort of thinking how unjust it was and how fucking... what's the point in anything? And just became a bit of a nihilist. And then I don't think it's necessarily because of this film, but in Children of Men, which...
spoilers.
I don't think it's because of this, but I think it encapsulates like what my thought process was around it. There's a scene in Children of Men in which everyone's infertile. Don't worry, that's not a spoiler. And the human population is soon to like die out.
Don't worry, that's not the fun bit.
And Clive Owen goes to see Danny Houston, who inexplicably lives in the Tate Modern. Mm-hmm. And he's surrounded himself with these like beautiful artifacts from around the world. And the end of their conversation, Danny Houston sort of like looks out over... there's a really good like motif of the Pink Floyd album with the pig floating above the thing. And it's just surrounded by beauty, basically. And Clive Owen sort of turns around to me, he's like... How do you do it? In 100 years, none of these sad fuckers are going to be around to see any of this. What's the point? And Danny Houston just sort of turns around and is like, do you know what I do? Just don't think about it. And then sort of gestures to all this beauty around him. And I think I was like, oh yeah, I think it's just the beauty of the beauty of life, which I think he just indulges in and appreciates, which is the sort of antidote to the fear of death, I think. And I think that the best you can hope for is just to like be distracted and not think about it.
So bringing you on a podcast about death to talk about death probably is the opposite of what you were going for. Having learned that lesson.
I thought I was here to hear about your full name. That's really why I came.
You thought it'd be longer. It is longer, don't
worry.
We'll get to it.
Yeah.
That's beautiful. Listen, I think about death a lot, but you're right. We probably should just enjoy this stuff.
This is nice, isn't it?
Yeah. What do you think happens when you die?
I just think what happens before you were born. Just go back to nothingness.
Phil, it's Saturday night.
It's your fucking podcast.
Give them something. Give them something.
I think that there's a highlight reel at the end. And it's... yeah. There's Bruce Forsyth is inexplicably alive again.
Yes.
And he's there taking you back, being like, you remember that time? Oh, that's not his voice. I don't know what his voice was.
Hey, I'm Bruce Forsyth. Yeah. Remember that time?
Remember that time you lost your virginity? And he's like in the room with you and like...
So he's watching
you. That didn't go to plan, did it?
So Bruce Forsyth is there watching you lose your virginity and speaking in a voice that is not his own. This is scarier than nothingness. But I don't hate it. Is the highlights, are they all just the sex you had throughout? Is Bruce Forsyth like, I've edited your life, and after a while you're like, you've only included the sex, Bruce. It's an awful lot of, did anything else? Oh yeah, no, I did just the best bits.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and the worst ones. Because again, life is a beautiful mix of the best and worst things and also just mundanity, and the really boring times.
The boring sex. Yeah. Yeah,
it's predominantly that. If I'm pushed for an answer as to what happens when you die, it's probably just replaying those.
It's a sex reel. Okay. The good, the bad, and the boring. The sort of sex where you're just like, let's just finish this.
The soundtrack of just ham slapping.
Now we're talking. Now we've got a show. I've got good news, but in a way, it's sort of maybe a disappointment. There is a heaven. Oh. It's not Bruce at the door, but it is Davina McCall. And but she also does not sound remotely like herself. She's like, hiya! And she's like, hiya, welcome! And she shows you your highlight reel of sex. And what's weird is she does a running commentary over the whole thing. And she sort of goes like, that was good. And... all that, and you watch that for eight. I mean, you had quite a lot of sex. Fair play to you. It goes on a while, but also this.
I was pretty much right. I mean, I'm amazed that is. I was so close. Yeah. It's just not Bruce Forsyth.
You're very close. What? What's your favourite thing?
Favourite thing in the world?
Yeah. There is a reason I'm asking. I just want to know. What's your favourite thing?
Coffee in the morning.
Right. This heaven. Once you get through the sex reel, which is very long and quite distressing, actually, to be forced to watch all of it. Once you get past that, it's coffee in the morning time. Oh. All the time. Oh. Every coffee is coffee in the morning. It's
Bruce
perpetual.
There?
Perpetual. It's what?
Is Bruce there?
Bruce is making the coffee. He's, he got moved out of the sex room because he kept going like that every time, and it was like... People were like, it's inappropriate, Bruce. We're trying to be... You can do the coffee. So he does the coffee in the morning.
Yeah.
And he's like, hi, does his voice that you like. He does, hi, here's your coffee in the morning. And then, anyway, everyone's there, your favourite people, Davina, Bruce. and they're very happy to see you. Everyone's excited to see you in heaven. It's really nice there. And you're, by the way, in case you were worried, your intestines have been popped back in.
Good.
And that string of poo popped back in.
I never said anything about the string of poo.
Out your belly button.
That was intestines.
Oh, I thought that was poo. It looks similar. Anyway, they're excited to see you.
Great.
I'm sorry, because now I feel bad, because I just stuffed a load of poo in your belly button when you got to heaven, and it wasn't even yours.
Whose is it?
I don't know. Might have been Bruce's. He's making all that coffee. He's constantly dropping it. Yeah. Right. By the way, it's never normally like this. Right, anyway, they're very excited to see you.
Yeah.
And they want to know about your life through film. Can you imagine? And the first thing they want to know is, what's the first film you remember seeing, Phil Dunster?
And I'd tell him. Mm. I'd say, I'd look him deep in the eyes.
Yeah.
And I'd say, the first film I remember seeing is James and the Giant Peach.
Mm. What a banger.
Oh.
Great film.
Corker. Absolute corker.
David Tulis' best role as the Earthworm?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Marion Margulies as well.
Yeah.
It's got a hell of a cast.
Heck of a cast.
A humdinger of a cast. You're talking Simon Callow. You're talking Pete Postlethwaite. No one knows his name. How to really say it. You have a go.
You're talking Joanna Lumley.
You're talking Susan Sarandon. Suzanne Sarandon.
Susan Soran, lovely film. Henry Selick, the man who directed Nightmare Before Christmas with Tim Burton, one of my favourite films, and he also made Coraline. He's fucking brilliant. Where did you see it? Do you remember?
I think it was at home. I think it was on a VHS, remember them. And I think I just, remember watching it over and over again. But the thing I remember the most about it is the little crocodile tongues. The little green thing, because he's got the little hot air balloon in his little piece of paper, and there's loads of glow-in-the-dark crocodile tongues that as soon as Pete Postlethwaite gives it to him, he's like, don't drop these. These are really magic. Don't drop... What have I told... Don't drop them. And he's like, cool, all right. Because as soon as you... They're going to fuck think... Don't... All right, I got it. Yeah, yeah. All right, see you later. Okay, bye. Boom, boom. Yeah, yeah. Useless.
Did you watch it? You have a brother, don't you?
I do, Stu.
Did you watch with Stu?
I did, yeah.
He's older, is he?
He is older.
Was he a nice boy to you?
He was a nice boy.
Good.
Probably...
Hold on.
Well, Doctor. It was circa years, say, 2 to 5. He probably spent a lot of time, I guess, throttling me.
Sort right,
of,
okay.
Sitting on my chest and, like, throttling me.
How old was he? 25? He was in his mid to late 20s. I was bored. He was jealous.
Yeah.
How much older is he?
2.5 years.
Okay.
Worry not. And then after that, post... Strangling,
yeah.
Great friends.
Post-court case, he's a lovely, lovely boy.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Hacks is back for season 3, and so is the official Hacks podcast. In each episode, Hacks creators Lucia Aniello, Paul W. Downs, and Jen Statsky speak with cast and crew members to unpack the Emmy-winning comedy series. You'll hear Hannah Einbinder and Jean Smart speak to their on-screen dynamic, along with Hacks writer and actor Pat Regan, on how their improv experience helped them when shooting scenes and what it was like writing scripts for specific actors.
You'll also hear from crew members like the costume designers on what it was like creating the world that Deborah and Ava inhabit. Hear stories from the show's writer's room, on-set antics, and more. Watch Hacks streaming exclusively on Max, and listen to the official Hacks podcast on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's a lovely boy.
What's the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
Hate it. It's as bad as being dizzy. What's the fucking point of being... It's stupid. Stop it. So... Yeah.
I love it.
What's the film that scared me the most?
Yeah.
The Witches.
Good.
Also Roald Dahl.
Good movie.
Yeah. Terrifying. Particularly that scene. Again, I don't remember all of it. Mm-hmm. Because luckily my brain has blanked that out. Bruce Forsyth will be playing that at the end.
Yeah.
Let me tell you. I remember that scene when they all take off their heads and the faces and they're all fucking long. You know this?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, mate.
And they've got really weird...
Talk about travelling boners. Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember. I remember that, mate. Go on. That's on my Davina show reel. Go on.
It's so horrible. And they've got like big... fucking wide angle lenses, so they're all like their heads look massive and weird, and then the little boy's like, oh my fucking god, and they turn him into a mouse. It's like, I think that the feeling of being, I don't understand the scary movie, like why do that to yourself? It's a bit like, I think it's a bit like having spicy food when I'm watching a scary film. If it's too spicy and I can't taste the film underneath, I'm like, I can't, I've ruined my night.
Right.
My eyes are streaming, I can't taste anything, and I hate the person who's made it. I'm like, stop doing this!
I'm starting to get why they put you as the computer guy in Scrubber. In the Witches, for those of you, you all know, is directed by Nicholas Roeg, who is one of the greatest, all-time greatest, and he made Don't Look Now, which I think is the greatest, possibly greatest film ever made. And he made The Man Who Fell to Earth, and he made Walkabout, and he made Performance. But I discovered today a film I'd never seen of his, which is an 18-minute short film that is called The Sound of Claudia Schiffer. And it's basically a montage of very beautiful fart noises.
Beautiful fart noises?
It's just like she's sort of just on a trampoline, slow motion. I mean, it's a lovely film.
Go on.
I don't fully understand why it was called The Sound of Her. But you got a vibe.
Can you give an example for
sort of like a beautiful, you know that they'd be lovely. It's sort of like you know what I mean? And if they came near, you'd be like, oh, don't, What fresh rose is this? Anyway, very good director.
Hell of a body of work.
Hell of a body of work, imagine. Yeah. Don't Let Now the Witches and the Sound of Claudia Schiffer. What a CV. What about crying, Phil? Do you cry a lot?
I do. I find that I hold it back, and I don't like that I do that. I find myself being like, don't cry, which I'm not a fan of. But the film that made me like just fully, uncontrollably cry was The Pursuit of Happiness. This is, with a Y, with a Y.
Have you all seen this film? If you haven't seen it, I went over it again today in preparation of this. It's King Richard I. It's the... it's the same film as King Richard, but he's trying to be a stockbroker instead of make tennis players. It genuinely is exactly the same film.
It's very good.
Like, it's a good film. I understand why he wanted to remake it. But it's just lots of him going, hey, let me in this case, office. But what I've... It's quite... Listen, there's lots to love about it, but it's also quite disturbing because it's about a man whose dream is to be a stockbroker. And there's a scene quite early on when he walks past, like, the stock exchange, and he sees people coming out of the office, and there's like slow motion and they're smiling, and in the voiceover he goes, these stockbrokers, they all look so happy. And I'm like, yeah, they're on cocaine. What are you talking about? This is not the end of the rainbow to be a fucking stockbroker. What the hell message is this film?
It's sad, isn't it?
No disrespect to any stockbrokers in the room, but
it's sad, isn't it?
It's really sad.
It almost makes you cry.
Yes. Hey. You were crying about capitalism.
Yeah.
Okay.
I
get it.
And I was young when it came out. I think it. Yes, it's a film about the American dream and how bleak that is, but it's also about it's about a relationship between a dad and a son and what he'd go through for that. But also it's really about Will Smith doing lots of scenes where he's trying not to cry, and that makes me cry.
Yeah, he does really good trying not to cry.
But then again, it's the whole film, is the premise of it is around a typo in the American Constitution. I mean, let's not talk about America's obsession with a piece of paper that was written about 350 years ago.
Yes, thank you, yes.
But it did lead to a great film. A sad film, but a great
film. So it's ups and downs over there.
Yeah. But this, to be fair, this is Will Smith at his absolute peak.
Yeah,
this is,
he's very good.
It's post iRobot, which I loved. I don't know if it's a good film or not. iRobot, Hitch, Circa, I Am Legend, pre Gemini Man, pre
After Earth.
Keep My Wife's Name Out Your Fucking Mouth.
Yeah.
Which I loved him in, by the way.
Yeah, I think he's great.
Yeah, very good.
Very passionate performance.
Yeah.
you really felt like he meant it.
Yeah.
You really thought, I must remove his wife's name from my mouth, actually. It's been stuck in there. And
which you're always doing, mad.
I really got to take that out. There's also a scene in it, I mean, and maybe it's true, the whole film's based on a true story, but he keeps sort of hounding this guy, big stockbroker guy, can I have a meeting, can I have this? And the stockbroker's trying to get in a taxi, and Will Smith says, oh, I'm going that way, can I come too? And the guy says, yes, which would never happen. And then they get in the taxi, and the guy's ignoring him because he's got a Rubik's Cube. And then Will Smith goes, and the guy goes like, oh, wow, this new thing. And Will Smith goes, I think I could do that. And then Will Smith does the Rubik's Cube. And that's how he wins his respect. What world do we live in? What?
America.
It's the raddest film I've ever seen in hindsight. That's how he becomes a stockbroker, because he got in a taxi with a geezer and done a Rubik's Cube.
Because he's got a 10-gallon head. He's a smart man. And everyone goes, oh, Will Smith, you're so smart. You're so smart. And let me give you my job. I think that's...
Let me put you in charge of cubes.
To be fair, that is the last time any... Because they make quite a big deal out of it at the start, don't they?
It's the inciting incident.
Yeah, that he can, and then that's it.
Play Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, and then he just has it.
Yeah, they never bring it up again.
Yeah.
When I hired him, I'd be like, where's the fucking Rubik's Cube?
But it does have that scene about the time machine. Because there's that mad bloke who keeps saying there's a time machine. And it's that bit makes you cry, doesn't it? When he's just depressed and he's like at the end of his... It's tether. I'm right at the end of my tether. He says that in the film.
He says, get my bloody wife's name out of your mouth. I've had it up to here.
And he's like desperate, and his son is just like, Dad. And he's like, I know. And then he just drops it all, and he's like, it is a time machine. He's like, no, it's not. He's like, it is. If you just press this button, and then they press it, and then Will Smith just drops all the sadness, and he's like, oh, there's dinosaurs everywhere, and it's so joyful, and it's like this imagination that's just shared between the two of them. It's a really beautiful moment, and then he uses it to get him into the toilet. It's not weird. It's not bad. It's his son. It's his son. It's his son.
Like
it's
I say, it's the maddest film I've ever. Yeah. No, that is it. Is there's lots to love in it. It's a nice choice, Phil. What is the film that's meant to be bad, but you love unashamedly?
Valiant.
Now, this almost never happens, but Phil sent me his list, and I've normally seen everything, and I had not seen this. So I watched it, and I'm a lover, you know that. It is bad. It's really bad. It's truly dreadful. The animation's like those sort of kids' YouTube algorithms that make themselves, where it's like, you know, it's very bad. I didn't understand what was going on.
Yeah.
It's mad. It's bad. Anyway, tell us why you love it.
I think it's just I watched it at a time in my life that I loved war films when I was a kid.
Right, okay. No,
when I was a kid, when I was younger.
Apocalypse Now, Valiant.
Platoon.
The list.
Yeah.
The list goes on.
And I think that it's a sort of weird Disney version of like Blitz, Blighty. And I was sort of, I really liked that sort of history in quite a perverse way, I realise now. But I was like obsessed with the Second World War. And I was like, but they were all moving in the same direction. And I think that's what we need now in this country. When I was 12. And I don't know, man, like, it's probably just rubbish, and it's got terrible rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which we all know is the...
Doesn't always mean they're right, but in this case, they're absolutely right.
Yeah. And it's got an amazing cast. It's got a mad cast. Yeah. You know, your Hugh Laurie's, your...
Your Hugh McGregor eras. Yeah. It's come on.
Your Ricky Gervais's, yeah. You know. Sharon Horgan.
Yeah.
Plays a French person.
Yeah.
Mouse, a French mouse. It's about, for those of you who hadn't seen it, I can't imagine you haven't, but if you haven't, it's about carrier pigeons in the Second World War and how brave they were actually, guys. And they saved lives.
For those of you who haven't seen it, you're fine.
I love it.
On the other hand, what's the film you used to love? But you've watched it recently and you thought, this is not for me anymore.
Starship Troopers.
Oh, dear.
I'm sorry.
You're fine with Valiant, but...
Yeah.
What else? Wow. I didn't know that would be so controversial.
What do you think of it?
I think it's fine. I think it's one of his... it's about Nazis, right? They're the Nazis. It's all It's all about fascism.
But it's
shot like, it's like subversive. You're watching, the heroes are actually Nazis, basically. That's what it is, right?
Love it. Take it back. Love it. It's good.
Yeah.
Well, I watched it again and it's like, look, for somebody who loves Valiant, this is a pretty moot point, but the animation is like mentally bad.
I don't know if you're the expert on this.
And it's like, it just toes the... Because I think it's trying to pastiche some of those, like, war film tropes. Certainly, like, America tropes that they have. And I think it just toes the line on the wrong side, where it's a bit too egregiously aggressive. Sorry, American people in the audience. And yeah, I think it's just a bit too... I just watch it now and I'm like, wow, that is really over egging the pudding.
Yeah, he's not subtle. It's not a subtle film.
Yeah.
But I think your reading of it is correct.
Yes, thanks, man.
I don't think it's...
You're so fit.
Stop, you are. What's the... I'm blushing. What's the film... that means the most to you, Not necessarily the film itself is good, but the experience you had around seeing it will always make it special to you. Phil Dunster.
I'll tell you.
Please do.
Brithaniel Goldstein. It's Wallace and Gromit, A Close Shave. Yes. Yes!
You've won them back.
Yes!
Whew. Wonderful film, a masterpiece. What's the experience you have with it?
Well, I mean, you can, particularly this one, but any Wallace and Gromit film for me is just such an evocative, beautiful film. From like, I guess there's the element of like, the subconscious element of like the craftsmanship or womanship or othership that has gone into it that feels so, I don't know, it just makes it feel very special. But for me, it's because Wallace has the exact same laugh as my granddad. And it's like, it's as if they've both read How to Laugh on page and they've gone, and he's got this beauty, he goes, and his shoulders go up and down. And I just remember sitting there at my grandparents' house, watching it cross-legged and like the dog, Sheba, beautiful Sheba, lying next to me, and like the smell of a roast chicken dinner coming from the kitchen, and just my granddad laughing with me whilst we, and it's silly and fun, and like, yeah, it just has, again, it's like, I don't know, they're a really great British film. They play on like silly British village tropes, and I think it's just really beautiful, and yeah, and I just think like the very like texture of it all is fucking lovely. That's what I said to my granddad. I was like, it's fucking lovely. He's like,
I'll give him a clap for that one. That made us all. He's a sweet, lovely boy. And as we know from all his choices, he likes British films for British people.
I back Britain.
Philippe, what's the sexiest? Is it now?
I don't believe so.
What's the sexiest film you've ever seen?
Well,
Davina's at the back with her notebook.
I don't think you'd let me have Christina Aguilera Dirty, the music video.
If you could have that if I can have any J-Lo song.
Have it. Oh, man. I mean,
this is now just two men on stage. Fuck it. You've seen that other one? Yeah, fuck it. She's my favourite.
Okay, now, it is inappropriate. It feels inappropriate.
I don't know anymore.
Well, yeah, it's hard to.
The question was sexiest.
It is.
I asked the question.
You've put me here.
I made this mess.
No, the sexiest film I've ever seen is A Knight's Tale. Oh.
Not elaborate. Yeah. For why?
I'll tell you for why. Everyone's so sweaty in it all the time.
It's a sweaty film for sure.
Oh, fucking hell, and he's dirty, and he's like, he like, is really passionate. I think what it is, and like Laura Jasper is beyond belief. She's so beautiful, like unobtainably beautiful.
Not for you, Phil. Come on. believe in yourself. If we've learned one thing, it's to believe that you could pull anyone.
But not solely to, you know, hideously objectify people, but the chemistry that the two of them have on screen is just, oh, God, it's like, you can see it. They're like, oh, mate, I mean, they'd pass their GCSE chemistry. Do you know what I mean? It's fire. And there's a scene when Heath Ledger has got hurt jousting and he's in bed. There's a lot of jousting in the film. And he's in bed and he's like, oh. And Laura Jasper comes in and she's like, and he's like, oh, fool. And she's like, oh, ooh. And he's like,
it actually won best screenplay at the Oscars. This film, you did that little fun fact.
Yeah, I don't know. I remember just thinking the two of them together were just so fucking sexy.
But you're not wrong. Now, given that we made that section quite uncomfortable as it was. Let's head first into Worrying Wydons, Troubling Boners, Worrying Wydons. What's the film? Yeah, for the... Are you getting into this podcast now, madam? Troubling Boners, I don't have to make eye contact with you for that. Troubling Boners, Worrying Wydons. A film you found arousing that you weren't sure you should.
It's oddly another Roald Dahl film. My Worrying Wydon was Matilda.
And that's all we've got time for. Thank you for coming, everyone.
There are people leaving.
The sting has worked.
Let me explain.
No, listen, Danny DeVito is fit. I get it. Go on, why so?
I had a teacher who, when I was in... Who's here tonight?
Who's here?
I had a teacher who, when I was in like year three, I really...
How old is year three?
Seven or eight,
okay.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. Must have been a bit later than that. That's mad.
It depends what she did.
Seriously, Troubling Boney.
I hope everyone is okay in this story.
No, she is blameless.
She's clean.
I was in and amongst a sexual awakening that happens that you're not aware of. But all I remember is that I really loved her. And you know, you've all had a crush on your teacher. Don't lie. Come on, yeah. And I just remember that I really, really wanted her to like love me. And I remember is this how you normally do it?
This is. You've managed to turn a picture of Matilda into making everyone cry. It's very impressive skill.
Right. It gets weirder, don't worry.
Okay, good.
I remember lying in bed. It's fine. I would lie in bed and I would, before I went to sleep, I would like imagine that she would ask me out. She would say to the class, I'm having a picnic and there's only one student who's going to come with me. And everyone was like, oh my God, I hope it's going to be me. And she'd just go, Philip, it's you.
What would happen on the picnic? What are you eating?
Well, we didn't have time to eat, boy.
I was 7 years old. I had shit to get done. Yeah.
No, but because I was, however old I was, like young, yeah. I didn't. It was nothing like that. I was just kissing. And I remember practicing kissing in the dark in my bed.
What were you kissing?
The air.
Right.
It was just meant like yeah. So there's shame around it, but you know, I shared that with the circle of trust.
Listen, I'm very
anyway,
proud
but,
of you.
So Miss Honey was like was embodiment of.
Can we see you doing the practice kissing without the mic in there? Yeah, it's hot. Okay, no, keep going. No, that's it.
Silly.
Silly boys.
Silly.
Go on, so what, Miss Honey?
And I think Miss Honey just really, really reminded me of her. And and it was, you know, and it was like, yeah. I mean, I don't know how much we want to go into the psyche of a 10-year-old boy with in this category, but, you know. That's it for me, where I was like, I don't know what this experience is, but Miss Honey's doing it for me.
Well, she's fucking lovely as well, isn't she, Miss Honey? The thing is, you do want to go for a picnic with Miss Honey, and you do want to kiss her, but you don't want to do anything else because you respect her too much.
Because you respect her, actually.
Just want to stroke her face a little bit and say thank you.
Yeah. And you're so good at maths.
Yeah. She's a lovely lady. Good luck to her. What's the film you most related to, Philip Dunster?
The film I most related to, Brithaniel Goldstein, is Before Sunrise.
Good film.
Ooh. Lovely.
You all seen that? Lovely film.
No.
What about it?
What? Go on.
You've been on a train? No, what?
I watched it when I was in my like early mid-20s. And for those of you who haven't seen it, two people meet on a train and basically just have a like, not 24 hours, but like...
One night
of just walking the streets of Prague and Vienna.
Vienna.
Thank you.
That's why they're here.
Yeah. Loved the film so much. They walk the streets of Vienna.
It's all the same to him. He just likes Britain, remember? Could be Vienna, could be Prague. Who cares?
And I think that it was at a time when, when you first start having those, you meet someone and all of a sudden you just have that instant connection, and then all of a sudden you become these like amateur philosophers, and you have the same connection with someone that you meet over one space of one night than you do with someone you've known for your whole life. And I think that what they do in that, and I think what Richard Linklater does really well in all his films, is sort of track that period of time, or a certain period of time, in a way that feels like you can relate to that yourself. And the way they do it in the film, I think, is they just have these sprawling conversations, the content of which doesn't really, you know, it's that old maxim when people say it's not, you don't remember what someone said to you, it's how they made you feel. And I think that this film really, those people in your life who, you know, there are people in my life that I've had those with that I don't remember now, but it's been a formulating experience for me, pretty much. And also, you know, I mean, I've gone back and watched the film since, and Ethan Hawke's quite creepy in it, so I relate to that probably when you're like trying to chat someone up. And there's a really amazing scene in it where they're in a record store and they're listening to music, and clearly Richard Linklater's been like, it's really like they're really in close proximity. All of a sudden they've been like walking along, and then all of a sudden they're really close, and Richard Linklater's clearly gone, just don't make eye contact, but you want to look at each other. And the whole time they're sort of like doing this, and they're like, I'm shy. And then they're like, oh, you're so fit. I'm shy, I can't. And it's fucking creepy. It is. But it's also, yeah, I think that, you know, it's fumbling and not like sexy in a really beautiful way, and I think that they capture that really well. And I think that we've all had those like meetings with people that just sprawl on, and I really love that in this film.
The whole trilogy is incredible. The second one is one of my favourite endings of all time, and then the third one is fucking brutal. Have you seen the third one's like fucking hell, bruv? What? It's really interesting. You're like, this love story got very real.
Yeah.
And there's a sex scene that's amazing, where they're about to have sex and then they get a phone call and then they're arguing, and it's just, and at the end you're like, I don't even know what if there's
what's the point of this whole thing? Yeah. Which I think is the perfect maxim for life, isn't it? Yeah, really, what's
so
the point?
Thank you, Richard Linklater.
Yeah. But I think, you know, and again, the whole thing, it's not a love story as such. It's full of like bitterness and resentment, but also beauty and like love, and it's just, I think it's a really beautiful little nutshell of life, isn't it?
Objectively,
we'll move on.
What is the greatest film of all time?
I'll tell you.
Please do, Phil Dunster.
I'll tell you, Brathaniel Goldstein. Mm. It is Children of Men.
Not bad.
It's good.
He's not far off. It's a fucking great film.
Thanks, man. I didn't make it, but I had to choose it.
No, well done. No, you really put your heart into it. It's really. It's bloody good, isn't it?
Oh, it's so good.
This section will just be us going, it's bloody good.
Oof.
With no detail or explanation. Yeah. It's very good.
It's very good.
Also has the scene, it's got a long one take in a car. Oh. You seen this film? If you haven't, yeah. Yeah. There's a scene in a car that I think might be the greatest sequence in cinema. I've even seen the making of it, and I still don't understand how they did it.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Explain.
Well, there's a car. There's actors in it.
Yeah.
They've got the roof. It's all the camera does 360 degrees in the car. The roof sometimes comes up so it can make room for the camera, and then pops back down.
Yeah, the chairs.
Motorbikes crash into the car. Things blow up around them. All in one take.
Yeah.
Everything is real except the one thing that isn't real, the one thing that's CGI. Do you know this? Is there's a bit where they're they spit ping pong balls into each other's mouth. Ping pong ball ain't real. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. which is probably the least disappointing of all of those things and the film itself, like, there's a lot of those one takes that just go on and on and on. And I think it was one of the first films I saw where I understood what that was and how, like, fucking, it's so intense to be a part, like, to be going along with that. And there is a scene where, I don't know, I think it's about 8 minute shot. And I think they had been, I mean, I'm going to butcher the story, but there was like, they had like a week and a half to shoot it, to get everything prepped. And he basically is running through like a big war scene, explosions, carrying, going with people. I don't want to spoil this, but it's like mad. Everything's kicking off. It's sort of like, you know, towards the end of the film. And they had the producers that come down. They're like, we can't shoot. This is it. This is it. This is the last shot we're going to have. And I think that it's a credit to what he does with the rest of the film. That he was like, his vision is so clear. The world is so deep and rich. And in this shot, Clive Owen is like running amongst this madness. And someone gets shot and there's blood that splatters. And not supposed to, but it splatters onto the camera and onto the lens. And at that moment, an explosion goes off. And Alfonso Cuarón he sees the blood go on the thing and he's like, fuck, we got cut. We can't have it. But because, and he's like, cut. But because, I'm telling someone else's story, like it's my, I don't know. And because this explosion had gone off, people didn't hear him say cut. And so the DOP was like, no, shut up, it's good, we're still going. And suddenly there's like blood coming down the lens and it's so intense and there's like explosions everywhere. And it's, and this shot now, because of this, it's something so fucking beautiful in it being this choreographed thing, there's so much pressure on this massive film budget that something like right in the middle of this chaos that seems, that, you know, on first view would be like the end of the shot, suddenly becomes like the making of this scene. And I think it's a film that just has so many layers in it, but there's moments of just like absolute fucking heart-wrenching brilliance and beauty. And I think it's...
You've argued correctly. Give him a clap. Give him a clap. Yeah.
And I would say it's Michael Caine. For me, it's Michael Caine's best performance. I love it. That sequence with Ruby Tuesday.
Get the fuck out of here. Oh. You know his best performance is Muppet Christmas Carol, and I'm not even... second, maybe. You can have second.
Should know my audience.
get out. What's the film you could or have watched the most over and over again?
Shaun of the Dead.
Lovely. Fucking lovely.
Is that, have you had that Big a lot fans. On this?
It don't must, matter.
No, I know, but like, just, I want to know that I'm with good
company. You're with the, listen, anything, once we got past Valiant, it's all uphill. You watch this one a lot, have you?
Yeah, boy.
All right. We do have to quickly deal with worst film you ever saw. What's the worst film you ever saw?
Worst film I ever saw was Black Widow.
Can I just say, for the record and on tape and in front of this audience, I love everything that Marvel and Disney have ever done. And I think that everything they've ever done is perfect, and I would never have a bad word to say about them. I think that they're the gods of cinema, and I love it. I love this film.
Do you do that for every film that someone says at this point? You're like, all right, but I love it. It's not me that's saying it.
Tell us about Black Widow. And obviously, I blanketly disagree, but go on.
Oh, man. It's... I like. So, I mean, look, to make any film is a miracle. Any film to get made, even with like mad budget, tiny budget, like it's brilliant. So like, even to, this is a tough, question to ask, but I understand why it's there, I've never walked out of a screening. I've never walked out of a film, and I didn't on this, but it was more because I was working in Farnborough and there was much to do there. So I was like, rather be in a dark room. I love Farnborough. but I just found it excruciatingly dull. It was more because it just didn't feel like it was all added up. And the accents were like mad.
Wait. How could you be bored in a film where Ray Winston is playing a Russian who may never have visited Russia? I was never bored when Ray Winston was talking. I wanted him to talk more. I am well Russian. And I have been in Moscow training my Russian. Could you say Russian a few more times so they know where you're from? Where a proper Russian, mate. Loved it. He's perfect.
I think that it was, mad, isn't it? That's all I got to say on it. No, but like, it felt like all of the set pieces were like a really good idea. And then it's like they ran out of time and they're like, oh, fuck it, that's fine. We'll just put that in. But obviously Florence Pugh is amazing in it because she's amazing in everything. And so that was,
Yes.
And all of it, like, to be fair, they put in a shift. Just, I don't know, just one of those.
That's what it said on the poster, they put in a shift.
I just didn't jazz with it, man.
I was thinking about Ray Winston in this, because he is doing a mad accent, but he's so charismatic, he's so good. And I think Ray Winston, Michael Caine, and Sean Connery, all three of them can't do any voices.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
Impervious.
Because they're so, you just love them. And I really love Ray Winston in this.
Did you still love, you saw through it when the basic, I'm going to spoil it, I don't care. The basic premise is that the ladies who have superpowers still have superpowers because they can't smell something. And then she breaks his nose. And I can smell. And then he gets beaten up.
Yeah.
Still love it? You still don't care?
Absolutely loved it.
All right, fair enough. Top 10, that, innit? Top 10.
Masterpiece. Absolute masterpiece. You're a funny boy. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tense. Go on.
Johnny English. It's not highbrow.
You know what? This was the second film on your list that I had to watch. It's not bad. It's fun. Yeah. It's very well made.
It's fun. It's Bean playing Bond.
Bean Bond.
Bean Bond. The name's Bean. Bond Bean. It's great. It's so funny. And he, like...
it is funny.
Him getting a muscle relaxant and just running around going... It's just, like, what's not to love about that?
Nothing. I loved it.
Yeah. He is so... And him pulling down the Archbishop of Canterbury's trousers.
And yeah, that went on a bit long.
And him going, are you insane? It really made me laugh. And maybe it was, again, I watched this with my cousins when I was like 15. And that sort of humour, that gets you going, boy. That gets you going, mate.
It's good. Now, Phil, when you went skydiving and... you jumped out and you opened your chute, but your timing was... What happened that day? I don't know if you remember, there'd been that announcement that gravity was going to briefly stop. And that's the bloody day you'd gone skydiving. You jumped out, gravity stopped, and you went straight up. Straight up. And you passed through some clouds, and she's right to leave. This bit is gruesome. You went into the clouds, and then you're... Eyes popped out. Your intestines, your belly button.
What's the?
And then that. Your intestines came out, and then your ears. Other intestines came out your ears.
What about the poo?
The poo that I didn't.
What about it?
The poo came. It was like pellets, and then you were spinning like Sandra Bullock, but
yeah.
With intestines hanging out your ears, like a skipping rope. And it was quite a sight. And I loved it. It was very very beautiful, actually. Kind of very moving. And anyway...
You could actually see me in the back of shot in Gravity. You can just be like...
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
George Clooney gives a little, that's fucked. And then you, anyway, I was passing in a, you know, spaceship, and I had a coffin with me, you know what I'm like. And I see you, and I go, oh, do you know what's happened? He's forgotten about the old gravity stop. And I knew he'd do this. What a plum. And so I
tried to warn him.
I said, don't go, Scott. He said, I was going, Scott. I said, not on gravity drop day. Anyway, put my hand in a pressurized, so I understand atmosphere, and I get you in the space lock. You're a fucking mess, mate. There's intestines. Now I've turned the gravity on you. Intestines hitting you in your empty eye sockets, and like those poo pellets, they're in your face now. You're a state.
It's all improv.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
Good,
this
isn't
is,
it? It's
sorry,
good.
Guys. Facts are facts.
Yeah.
Anyway. I put you in the coffin. I have to chop you. I actually have to get a space axe.
Chop me up?
I have to get a space axe because all these fucking intestines, they're just like tied up.
Well, just tie it, wrap it around me.
No, I can't. They're everywhere. It's making a terrible mess.
Don't chop me up. That feels incredibly personal.
I chop you up with a space axe.
All right.
Yeah.
A space
axe. Yeah. The camera caught me grinning while I did it. I don't know why. It was thrilling. Anyway, I chop you up, get you in the coffin, stuff you in. Turns out. So, a lot more of you than I was expected, because on camera you're much smaller. And turns out you're a big boy.
Big boy.
Big boy. Big intestines. Anyway, you're in the coffin. There's no room in this coffin. There really isn't. There's only enough room to slip one DVD in the side with you for you to take across to the other side. And every night, it's movie night on the other side. What film are you taking to show the people of heaven, which is just Davina and Bruce in heaven when it is your movie night?
I'll say to them, Davina, Bruce, we're watching Shaun of the Dead.
And they're like, yes, yes. And Bruce goes, oh, but can we watch your sex reel again? Ladies and gentlemen, we will wrap up Phil and then come to you. So I think we can all agree that Phil has been an absolute fucking delight. Please give a round of applause to Mr. Phil Dempster.
Thank you.
You're
great.
You were brilliant.
You're fit.
I knew you would be.
You're smart.
You're so good.
You're loyal.
Kiss, anyway. So, ladies and gentlemen, we have a little bit of time, maybe 15 to 20 minutes, we'll see. If anyone in this audience would like to share anything with the room. Now, I appreciate this is a fucking massive venue, and maybe you're thinking, I'm not talking, but I also know people. Now you can see each other, look at you, fit. Look, here we go, fucking straight away. If you're asking to sign us, that is better be what you're saying into this mic. Please, would you mind giving the microphone to this lady who's never seen the podcast and doesn't know why she's here? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I've had a fantastic evening. Thank you very much.
Oh, great. You should have a listen.
I will.
No, I'm really glad. Thank you.
So I know from my lovely friend who has told me all about the podcast that you talk about films that mean a lot to people. With people in the audience, not just people.
Yeah.
So I'll give mine, I guess, which is The Breakfast Club by John Hughes.
Excellent.
Mostly because I think it was the first time, and this, I probably saw it when I was like 11, maybe. It was on, do you know when BBC used to actually show films on a Friday and Saturday night? I'm really old. And I remember catching it and just thinking, oh my God, this is the first time that a film has ever actually resonated with me in a way that isn't just entertainment.
Who were you in The Breakfast Club?
Oh God, I mean, I think we all wanted to be like John Nelson, didn't we? But really, in reality, I was Anthony Michael Hall. Let's be fair about it. But it was, I think it was just the way that it was written. Like, John Hughes just had that thing that he could just tap in like that to any genre, and whoever he was talking to, he got it. And I just remember being completely obsessed and going down to the ex-VHS rental shop that used to be able to buy... Do you remember you used to be able to buy, like, old copies from films that you had rented 100 times? Well, not even Blockbuster. This was like a stall in a market. The stuff probably fell off the back of a lorry.
Oh,
who
yeah,
cares?
The dodgy one.
It was five films for a fiver, so who cared? And I remember just doing the whole back catalogue of John Hughes, and like that was the moment I'm like, do you know what? That this is what film is supposed to be. This is what makes all of this. What we love for the rest of our lives. You know, these things that we go back to, the films that we love. Even the crap films, though I agree with you, Grease 2 is amazing. It's better than Grease 1.
Okay, you've won me back. What's your name?
Carly.
Carla?
Carly.
Carly. Can we have a round of applause for Carly? Thank you, Carly. Thank you very much. Really feel like you're starting to get the podcast. It means a lot. Thank you. You'll leave it so amazing. Anyone else? Would anyone like to join? You can stand, yeah. Hello, what's your name?
Victoria.
Hello, sorry. Victoria. Jesus.
Hi. First of all, love you, Brett. Love your podcast. It saved my sanity.
I'm very fond of you, Victoria.
Thank you. And the film that means the most to me,
yeah,
it's probably a bit weird to say, but it's Carrie, Brian De Palma's Carrie.
Love Carrie.
Love Carrie.
Great.
But I first saw it.
It's Matilda with
Black.
And
Matilda.
In it?
Yeah. I first saw Carrie when I was 7.
Yeah.
I know.
Perfect.
But I have 4 brothers, and like, I have 2 brothers, 2 sisters, and it was the first film I asked that on VHS for Christmas, and I said I want it, and my mum gave it to me.
Amazing.
And it's the first film I had that was just mine and not my siblings, and I wouldn't let anyone else watch it. But through it, I learned who Stephen King was. I learned who Sissy Spacek was. I learned who Brian De Palma was. And through that, through the Stephen King, The Shining, and then Jack Nicholson, and was introduced to all these films because of Carrie. And I owe a lot to Carrie. And I'm also going to say any film by Jonathan Demme, because he's the greatest filmmaker of all time. Thank you.
Really, really good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Victoria. I really love the idea of you locking yourself in a room from your entire family when you were 7, and all they can hear through the walls is, screaming. It's my favourite film, leave me alone.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm a teacher. It feels very weird to hold my hand up like that.
Yeah.
Some children do that to me
all day.
Here
you go, Phil.
Hello. No.
What's your name?
Hello, my name is Tara. I'm a hideous American.
Hey.
And I agree with everything that you said earlier. My most meaningful film is actually Event Horizon.
Love Event Horizon.
Terrifying.
Love it.
I hate scary movies, and I hate being...
silly.
I don't... That's a level of masochism I'm not willing to go to, thank you very much. Mm. But I've seen Event Horizon 4 times.
Okay.
I was in high school when it came out, what, 97, 98, something like that. And my very best friend made me watch it, took me to the theater, all of my friends. I was just punching them through the whole thing. This is terrible. How dare you? Oh, my God. I'm so offended. Screaming, crying, hiding. And then somehow I let them talk me into watching it repeatedly over the next few years. My best friend died when we were 25. So it's one of those films that I hate. And yet my memories about that film are deeply, deeply rooted in my friend. And that's the thing that film does to you, right? Like, I hate this movie. It's absolutely terrible. And I will never watch it again. And I can't disassociate my best friend from the film.
Was your name Tara?
Yes.
That's my sister's name. That is such a beautiful answer, and I really appreciate you sharing that. Will we have a round of applause for us?
Thank you.
I
keep a list of the questions from the podcast in my phone because it makes a very good icebreaker or, like, car trip. Like, people who don't listen... I don't listen to podcasts. It's the only podcast I listen to.
Well, I'm on it. There's loads of others.
Which is partly why I don't listen to them. There are too many, and that's
Listen to Desert Island Discs, whatever you do. That would just...
Yeah, it's a shit concept. I don't get it. Thank you. Thank you, Tara.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. There's a thing in the film Event Horizon, if you've not seen it, towards the end, Sam Neill's gone mad... And he's like got his back to everyone, and he's going to take the ship to hell, to actual hell. And they say, it was not until I was older that I realized it's like a Back to the Future reference that they go, we're going to hell, how are we going to get there? And he turns around and he's got no eyes. He's poked his own eyes out and he goes, where we're going, we don't need eyes. Yeah. It's a really good film, yeah. Anyone, I mean, that's a tough one to follow. So good luck, who's next? Who has the mic? Someone?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, what's your name?
I'm Hannah.
Hello, Hannah. I'm Brett, this is Phil.
Nice. Hey, mate.
Lovely to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Oh, it's actually really scary now.
It is scary, it is scary.
It's really scary. It is.
You're not wrong, there's a lot of people.
The film that I most relate to, slash also one of the films that means the most to me, is Frances Ha.
Yes.
It's a great film, and if you haven't watched it, you're missing out. But also, like, just as someone who wholly, like, values female friendship in their life above pretty much everything else, I just think it's, like, it's relatable because it's just about figuring out what you want to do with your life, which is very relatable. And there's just a bit in it where, like, Adam Driver, I think, yeah, he says to her, like, he's just started seeing Greta Gerwig's character, and he calls her, like, he says, ahoy, sexy. And then her and Sophie, like, her best mate, they make it, like, a running joke for the rest of the film. And I live with two girls, and that is literally, like, the most relatable thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
I just think it's beautiful. And also, speaking of female friendship, I want to give a shout out to my best friend, my oldest friend, who's here with me and told me about the podcast. I'm so glad she did, because I listen to it every day. It's my favourite podcast.
Oh, my God.
Bloody hell.
Thank you.
That's very nice.
Thank you. Right. Thank you so much. The standard is so high. This guy that wants all the attention. Let's hear it, but know what you're following.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I don't like you. You're too confident. This is...
It's not the film that means the most to me, but it's a pretty funny story. I want to talk... I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I want to talk about the film Enter the Void by Gaspar Noé.
I love Enter the Void.
It's brilliant.
Okay, I'm listening.
So I watched this film about 3 months after I stopped smoking a load of weed, right? And what happens when you stop is your tolerance just drops. But I didn't know that. So, you know, my friends band together and they're like, let's smoke a joint and watch this film. And I'm like, that sounds like a great idea. And I smoked some of this joint I felt like a barking dog. Rough. And I go into the kitchen and feeling shaky.
You're not the only comedian here, boy. Love that.
Oh, dear.
I go into the kitchen and I hit the deck. I pass out.
Yeah.
completely. I think I was out for maybe 5 minutes, my friend said. I woke up, everything was fine. The first thing I did was check to see if I shit myself. I didn't, that was fine. So after that relief, I said, so are we watching this film then? So I just think it's funny that before watching Enter the Void, I entered the void.
Well done. Does anyone else want to do their Edinburgh preview here? thank you for sharing. That's really excellent. You're great.
Should have heard Alfie's story.
You what?
Shame Alfie wasn't here, because his story
Archie,
was...
it was Archie.
Oh,
I miss Archie. let's have someone here. There's a man with a beard. Is that right? A man with a beard.
It's actually for my brother, this.
Oh, it's for your brother. I wanted the man with the beard.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
What's your name?
Sam.
Hello, Sam.
I had an idea for a question that you could introduce, but I'll answer yours really quickly.
So much going on here, Sam. Hang on, what's your idea? Why are you giving us a cliffhanger before you do the...
My answer for the film that scared me... Well, one of my answers for the film that scared me the most is eighth grade. Because when she goes to the swimming pool, it's horrifying.
Which, what did you say, sorry?
Eighth grade.
Which film?
Eighth grade.
Oh, eighth grade. Oh, that is my answer. That is fucking properly a scary film. Well done, Sam. What's your question that you want me to ask people?
I thought, Because you always say that you have the alternative for what a film that you used to like.
Yeah.
And then you say the opposite.
Yeah.
But the opposite would be a film that everyone loves that you don't love. But that doesn't exist. So I thought you could do like a controversial opinion on film.
Yeah.
I'll go first.
Sam, what I like about your podcast is you don't need anyone else. We could just sit back. You don't need a guest. You don't need nothing.
It's probably mainly controversial to you.
Go on. Go
but
on.
But my opinion would be that School of Rock is basically just the worst version of Sister Act 2.
Get out, Sam. Right. Show's over.
Gets the people going. Gets the people going.
Sam and his alt-right film podcast. Just saying shit for clicks. Oh, Sam, what a shame. What a shame. You lulled me in with your interviewing yourself style. Is there anyone here that I want to meet?
Hi.
Hello. What's your name?
It's Anna.
Hello, Hannah.
Hi.
All the Hannahs over there. Hannah, do you want to stand? You don't have to. That's a lot of pressure.
Sure.
That's Hannah.
Hi.
Hi.
So one of the films that I love that everyone else that I've ever met seems to not like is Twilight. It just gets overhated so much.
Sam, that is how you do it.
Like, it's a bad book with a bad script for a film with bad acting, but it's just brilliant.
Yeah.
Also, there's a bit of a story. So basically, before I turned 20, I had a bit of like a midlife crisis where I was like, I'm turning 20, I'm not going to be a teenager anymore. And then I was like, I love Twilight, I'm going to continue watching it. And then I watched it about 20 times in a month. And it's just great.
Yeah, I love that. I got no notes. Thank you, Hannah. Thanks. Thank you very much. Now, look, there are people in the seats upstairs. We can't get the mics to you, but I wonder, maybe we have one of you, because it's not fair that you're being left out, but you're just going to have to really project. But not like this guy. Like, as in, I still want you to be a real person. lady at the front, we've got glasses on your head. Yeah? Hey, look at this. Here we go. This is fucking Shakespeare now. What's your name?
Caroline,
welcome. Caroline, regale us.
I was wondering, off the top of your head, if you knew your neighbor Maureen's most important film?
Oh. Good projection, good question.
Good question. Good question. Listen, I know all about my neighbor Maureen. And my plan is when I do, I did finish the podcast 3 weeks ago, then started it up again. And my plan is when I finally finish that the final episode will be my neighbor Maureen. So I wouldn't like to spoil them, but I will say, her sexiest film is Super Bob, which is very uncomfortable. Very. Very uncomfortable.
I wasn't allowed to say that.
Thank you, and well done. Yeah, it's balcony suits you. Anyone else? What about the very top?
I'm just going to awkwardly stand.
What's your name?
Charlotte.
Charlotte, hello.
Hello. So I just want to say thank you, because it is actually my birthday today. So this is...
Hey! Happy birthday.
Thank you. So this is my birthday present.
Wow.
And so, like, my most meaningful movie and my favourite movie of all time is Death Becomes Her. Yeah. And so basically, when, like, ITV, like, 4 or something was showing it in, like, when
yeah,
I was,
they
like,
show it every day, yeah.
Yeah. it was, like, my nan recorded it for me. And so I literally was obsessed with it. She gave me the tape. And I still have the tape, and I used to watch, like, every day. And so, yeah. And I just want to know, what's your favourite Meryl Streep movie?
That's a great question. It's Mamma Mia, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the one film you're like, oh, she finally cares about this film. You know what I mean? Like,
but not Mamma Mia 2. We don't...
You what?
We don't accept.
Oh no, Mamma Mia 2 is amazing. It's just she's not in it much.
No, it's the only good bit is Cher.
Whoa. Whoa.
It is.
No.
Yeah.
Hard disagree. Mamma Mia 2 is amazing. It's The Godfather 2.
No, it's what? Terrible.
You're all you crazy.
You can't have Mamma Mia without the mama.
She does pop up though as like a ghost. You know I like ghosts. She pops up like, oh, do you remember me? And you're like, yeah, we missed you. All right.
Yeah.
Well, it was fun for a bit, and then you made me sad about Mamma Mia too. Thank you very much,
Dad.
That is excellent. Thank
you very much. Happy birthday.
And happy birthday. Hey, we are honoured. We are honoured that we are your birthday gift.
Hiya.
Hello.
Hi.
What's your name?
Ruby.
Ruby, hello.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
That's weird, we're not meeting. You're quite far away.
This is meeting. What would make this a meeting? This felt like a meeting.
We
had to shake?
I'm a bit stressed now. I backed myself and then I've changed my mind.
I've met you, Ruby. I'm going to tell everyone. I met Ruby.
Thank you.
If you say, we didn't meet.
I mean, you might regret it because I'm about to tell you the film that I think would get me cancelled if I was famous enough to be on Films to be Buried with.
Let's hear it.
Maybe it's not that bad. I would either bring this up as film that makes me laugh the most or film that means the most, but it's the 2010s version of St. Trinians. Yeah?
Okay.
We like St. Trinians. Okay, about 15 minutes in, it has just a completely unforgivable slur against Roma people, which I'm not defending. The whole sexy schoolgirls thing is weird. And yeah, Rupert Everett is playing Camilla Fritton with like all his heart. And I like went back and rewatched it and I was like, I think, you know, the whole premise is it's Rupert Everett in drag playing Camilla Fritton. And I was like, this is going to end up being transphobic. This is going to be really uncomfortable. It's not. He's putting everything into playing Camilla Fritton. And he's like real. And Colin Firth is really selling the romance back at Rupert Everett.
Yeah.
And in the same way that you can quote Sexy Beast, St. Trinians is the film that, like, just me and my friends have just broken it down into the like single words, but we do them in the like
can
in
you give
the
us
voices.
Three?
So there's the bit when she's doing school, when one of the posh totties is doing school challenge, and she sort of leans across and presses the buzzer, and she goes, Ovid.
Really good.
And then Rupert Everett as Camilla Fritton going, University. it's. Have you seen it?
I love it. You're absolutely right.
Okay. Thank you. That's it.
Ruby, that meeting will go down in the ages. Thank you. Okay, last one. And bear in mind, if this is the last one, it's got to be...
A belter. My one is...
What's your name?
Xanthi.
Xanthi?
Yes.
I like that. My best friend's called Xanthi.
I know, I do know that, yes.
You know her?
I know. No, I
hang on, what the fuck's going on?
That.
Are you Xanthi?
Anyway, my film, speaking of Cher and Meryl Streep, is Silkwood.
Meryl Streep,
Cher, do yourself a favour if you haven't seen it. It's
Meryl
absolutely
Streep,
incredible.
Meryl Streep, phoning it in, Silkwood, yeah.
Oh. Directed by Mike Nichols, amazing, so that's all I have to say about that. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you, Xanthi, and a great name. Let's let this lady who had... You were very desperate, and I felt sad.
Hello.
Go on, what's your name?
There was two of us.
Okay.
I'm Sinead. This is Rose. Hi there.
Hello, Sinead and Rose.
Hello.
I'm terrified. Go on.
Hello, everyone. So we've been best friends. This is female friendship. We're going to end on that note. We've been...
I'll take it.
We have known each other since we were five. We met at Catholic school.
Yeah.
I'm Jewish now, go figure. And,
and I'm still not Catholic.
So, but when we were seven...
Mm-hmm.
We acquired a copy of the greatest film of all time, Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion. I mean, I think so.
Romeo and Michelle's High School Reunion.
Wonderful. We watched it every day. And we marched around our playground quoting it. And calling people brain-dead redneck assholes. And I would say that that is probably the foundation of our personalities, let alone our friendship. So, Roman Pichard's High School Reunion. Watch
Beautiful.
Out, Tucson. Here we come.
Beautiful. Ladies and gentlemen, you have, honestly, it means a real, it's a fucking big deal that you all came out to this tonight. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much. It has been, I hope you've had as much fun as we bloody have, because I've loved it. And thank you so much. It's really, it's a privilege that you would come. So thank you. And but now we must finish officially the podcast recording. So that was the live episode. Thank you so much to Ben and Naomi and all the crew at the Hackney Empire. Thank you to Phil for his time with us. Thank you to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photography. But most of all, thank you all for being here. In the meantime, have a lovely week, and please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.